Blog Talk Radio.
The other day I had a piece in the Wall Street Journal about whether or not the Congress could, under the Constitution, regulate health care. Obviously, it can't. Health care is not mentioned in the Constitution. The framers had doctors. The framers had hospitals. The framers got sick. The framers needed health care. It was beyond their wildest imaginings that they would be creating a government that would somehow be able to regulate this kind of human behavior. But they did give the Congress a very unique power called the power to regulate interstate commerce. Madison argued that to regulate means, and this is what it meant at the time, if you have an Oxford English Dictionary, which gives you the history of the meaning of words throughout history, to regulate meant to keep regular. It meant to make sure that there is commerce between the states, not to allow the Congress to regulate everything under the sun, like the conditions of employment or the hourly wages or the materials used to make up the article that moves in interstate commerce, but just to make sure that interstate commerce is regular, to prevent, for example, the state of Pennsylvania from saying to merchants in New Jersey, you can't sell your goods here, only local merchants in Pennsylvania can sell them. That's what the Commerce Clause was written for. But Congress, of course, has used it to regulate the air that you breathe and the water that you drink and the force of the shower in your home and the size of your toilet bowl and the number of legs on your desk chair, and on and on and on. Do you know that the Congress has used the Interstate Commerce Clause to make it a crime for you to speak the truth? If an FBI agent shows up at your house with a self-written search warrant, the agent will tell you, you may not tell anyone about this. You may not tell your spouse in the bedroom. You may not tell a priest in the confessional. You may not tell your lawyer in her or his office. You may not tell anyone in whom you confide. You can't even answer truthfully in a courtroom under oath whether or not you received one of these warrants without violating the Patriot Act. Well, in Bridgeport...
All right, everybody. It's Monday night, and that means it's time for the Constitution Hour. I'll be your host, Richard, this is for you, Ron Golden, reporting live from Woodstock, Georgia, USA. I want to remind everyone that the Patriot Families, with a Y-S, patriotfamilies.com, is the folks that make the Constitution Hour possible. And Robert, I see you there, and I'll bring you up in just a moment. You know, I played a little bit of the judge there. And it just to show you an example of how far we have allowed our public servants to stray from the meaning of our Constitution. Now, I know there are those folks that want to talk about original intent. I am a firm believer in it's not about original intent. It's about what the damned document says, and it must be read in the form, the English language, and the definitions of the words, as the judge pointed out in that clip, must be drawn from the time at which they were given to try and put today's definitions on the language that was written down some 235 years ago. Well, we see the results. A lot of stuff going on in our economy today, a lot of stuff going on over the weekend in the economy. I see today that, as I predicted yesterday when Joe had called in, that we got the seesaw effect in the markets. Gold and silver went down, the dollar went up, Crude oil went down, but only just slightly, 31 cents a barrel. And now that the markets have closed here in the U.S., trading in the Asian and European markets, gold and silver are back on the rise. The dollar is back on the decline. Crude oil is kind of holding steady. Not a whole hell of a lot in the grand scheme of things. I think what it does indicate is precisely what I'm going to share with you with a clip here in just a moment. I think what it does indicate is that traders here and abroad are trading off of some keywords and an algorithm that they have set into their trading platforms. And it shows the Asian and European confidence that the European banks move to purchase bonds, in other words, to buy their own European Union debt of the European EU countries. They believe that that's going to work, and so they're showing some confidence. So when the U.S. markets are closed, we'll see a slight increase in the Eurozone and a slight decline in the dollar. And then, of course, when the U.S. markets open, we'll see the opposite occur. And we'll see some of this seesawing back and forth. And it will all come to a whole bunch of nothing. That being said, without further ado, I want to play you a clip of the former head of the OMB, for those of you that aren't in the know, that is the Office of Management and Budget, during the Reagan administration. He was on a television program, and on this program, he explains why Romney and the current crop of Republicans aren't going to get it right, aren't getting it right. And he also explains who he believes is the only individual who had it right and still has it right. So bear with me. The clip is about 4 minutes and 30 seconds long, and then we'll get to Mr. Robert.
The GOP candidates or the Obama administration, joining us now, former Reagan OMB director David Stockman, who is, there's a lot more to you than the way we've been teasing you this morning, that you just take the Romney Ryan budget and you sound like you're, a turncoat Republican that's thrown his lot in with the Democrats. In fact, you think Ron Paul probably has the...
Was the only one that was right about the Fed, and the Fed is the heart of the problem. We have destroyed the capital markets, the money markets. Interest rates mean nothing. Everything is trading off the Fed. Wall Street isn't even home. It's a bunch of computers trading word clouds, emitted by this central bank or that. Now, in that environment, right, Everybody's being given the wrong signal. In other words, the Ryan Romney campaign is about restoring vibrant capitalism. How can you do that when the financial markets are dead? The lifeblood of a capitalist system. That is the problem today.
And the other thing you point out is, why would either side come to the table to deal with long-term entitlement issues when you can borrow at zero?
Yeah, you look at the yield curve this morning. 3-year money, 33 basis points. That's absurd. 1-year money, 11 or 16, whatever it is. All the way out to 5 years, you can fund this debt at 65 basis points. Now, I spent a lot of years in Washington in Congress. I know what it takes to have people fall on the sword, to really reform entitlements, or finally face up to the military-industrial complex, or maybe begin to reform the tax code. They'll never do it if you can keep borrowing free money forever,
right,
because the Fed and these lunatics who are running it, and I use that word advisedly, are basically telling the whole world untruths about the cost of money, about the cost of risk, about how... You allocate.
You wonder why we get the, bubbles and you know, when you're keeping things at zero, and obviously that's not what the, any of these yields, that's not where they should be.
Yeah, well, let me ask.
You said that the reason you're mad at the Republicans is because they've abandoned the Republican principles of their forefathers, more or less.
Exactly, and it happened. Everything that Ronald Reagan stood for in the 1980s went down the tubes in September 2008 when they bailed out Wall Street. When they came in with this TARP, which was an abomination, when they were unwilling to let Morgan Stanley go down the tubes, which it should have because of the speculation that it was doing and the irresponsible, reckless balance sheet that it had.
If you can't fail, you shouldn't succeed, right?
That's exactly right. And so we haven't even addressed any of that. We have simply said there was some great crisis. We don't know where it came from. Maybe it came on an asteroid or a meteor from outer space. But it's over, and we're going to keep interest rates at zero for 6 years. Go back to pre-1990. Right. I was around quite a while. No one in 1990 would have thought keeping interest rates at zero for 6 years was anything
and
but
limited. The Romney Ryan budget, I looked at some of the things you don't like about it.
Yeah.
You hear that Medicare is going to end as we know it, and then the Republicans come back and say, well, wait a second, anyone who's over 55 won't be touched. That's what you don't like about it. It takes 10 years to address Medicare. You want to address it even sooner, and you want to do a lot of cuts that the progressives would not like, but you admit that there's some tax.
Of course.
So they got the wrong guy for their poster child for the left.
I think they do, but here's the thing. We have a $800 billion defense and national security budget.
Right.
I call that the warfare state. It's absurd that we're spending
$800
billion when we have no industrial enemies in the world. Ryan wants to hold it or increase it. All right, $800 billion goes to Social Security. 40 million of the people on it need it. There's 15 million that are affluent that have many other assets and sources of income. They should be means tested now. Medicare, he's taken a huge hit for Medicare. He doesn't touch it till 2023. Well, why does someone think we're going to get between now and 2023?
It's a third rail, because you can't even take 2023
What would you cut the defense budget by?
I would cut it by a third. I would radically come in there. I would tell the generals, put your toys away, get out your sharp pencils. We are going to bring this thing down to a level in real terms that Eisenhower in 1960 said we could live with when we were facing a real industrial enemy that actually was able to do some damage.
What else would you cut?
I said I would means test heavily Social Security,
yeah.
Medicare, drastically reduce defense spending.
How would you handle Medicare? Medicare.
Do you like a voucher?
All right. So I think that was kind of interesting, that conversation. What do you think, Mr. Robert?
How you doing, Mr. Ron? That was pretty good.
Sure as I'll get out, but, you know.
It's the same old, same old.
Well, you know, what I think is interesting, and, of course, he went on to call for tax increases, okay, which I disagree with. And I think it's interesting also to note that he said that everything Ronald Reagan stood for went out the window in 2008. So,
right.
You know, he didn't talk about 2001 and the Patriot Act and some of the other things. But in all fairness, I think he's just focused on the economic portion of things. I disagree with him on the idea of raising taxes on anyone at this point. But that's another argument, you know. Clearly, he's correct that the Fed is the problem. I agree that the market is out to lunch. We've talked about that on previous shows, and I think the proof is in the pudding. I mean, and anybody that follows the markets, you know, and I know most people here don't follow the markets. I follow them on a daily basis just to keep my finger on the pulse of kind of what's going on behind the scenes. If you look at the trading volume, it's anemic at best. The volume largely represents exactly what that gentleman was talking about. Frank had pointed out on previous shows that he can watch the market and see at 2:30, 3 o'clock every day is when the trade volume actually occurs. And historically, most of that volume is insider investments. And what I mean is institutional investments, government holdings. In various hedge funds that are largely invested in pensions, government pension funds, be it, you know, local, state, or federal. It's not to say that federal government encompasses all of the stock, but 80 to 85% of all the stock that's traded on the market today, we know, is tied back to institutional investment via these various hedge funds and pension funds.
Right.
It's mind-numbing.
It is mind-numbing. I mean, well, you know, I mean, when you look at Medicare, I mean, what really, really boils me, Ron, is that do you believe or do you think that billionaires and millionaires should even deserve Medicare?
It's not a matter of deserve. It should not be an option for anyone with a net worth. Now, you have to be very careful because, you know, there are some people like my grandfather, for instance, okay?
He was
a farmer, and he ran the family farm, had been in our family for over 110 years when he passed away. And on paper, he was worth well over $2 million. But that was all paper wealth. And what I mean by paper wealth is the majority of his wealth was in the property that he owned, the farmland.
Right.
So it wasn't liquid wealth that he could have access to without simply just selling the farm.
I know he
would have signed up for Medicare and Medicaid anyway, because he wouldn't have, because it was against his morals and his judgment. He would never have done so.
I understand that, but I'm talking about people that have liquid cash that are worth that amount.
Oh, I agree, and I understand what you're saying. I'm just pointing out that it's real easy to paint people with a broad brush based on an economic figure, a dollar figure, a net worth figure, and encompass people that are by no means wealthy.
Exactly. What really, really upset me today was hearing Mitt Romney stating, quote, you know, he agreed with the Obama's pre-existing conditions. He was going to repeal Obama and replace it, and he's going to replace that. He's going to replace what Obama has signed into law and repeal it, basically. You know, that's my final interpretation on that.
Well,
you know,
I'm going to tell you something, and I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, I think a lot of Republicans are getting buyer's remorse at this early stage of the game. And if you'll go back into the archives, you will find that I told everyone long ago. Now, I didn't mention Romney and I didn't mention Ryan, but I did mention that the Republicans, ladies and gentlemen, did not want to repeal Obamacare simply to get rid of a crappy law. My own state of Georgia, our representative Phil Gingrey, who is a medical doctor, has been vaunting the praises of repeal and replace. See, it's not a matter of they want to get rid of Obamacare. No, they want to take the credit for their own damned socialized medicine program. The Republicans want to replace it with their own ideology. They don't agree that the government doesn't have the authority to regulate medical care. They don't agree that the government has no business being involved in your medical decisions. They simply disagree with the fact that it is the Democrats that are getting all the glory and not the damned Republicans.
The single payer plan, that's what they want.
Right. Look, I'm telling you, I said it before, they will not be satisfied until we get everyone in the nation on a single payer system, which, by the way, Romney has already told you they want to block grant out to the states, okay? And you are going to have 50 different single payer systems under one single payer. And we already know that if you take any thing at all, any venture whatsoever, and you add the federal government in the mix as the middleman, you diminish the amount of dollars going out. So if you've got $1 million coming in, you've got $500,000 at best going back out to the state. Now you're going to involve the state government, okay, as the next middleman in the process. And guess what you're going to end up with? Another 200 and some odd thousand dollars evaporating into the bureaucracy. It is absolutely ignorant, and it's immoral. And, you know, at least with Obama, people didn't begin to have buyer's remorse until after he was actually elected into the White House and had a chance to screw up a few times. I have to question whether or not Romney actually wants to be president of the United States, or if the plan was all along to get the true conservatives, those few that were willing to hold their nose and vote for the lesser of two evils, if the plan was just to get them so disenfranchised with Romney that Obama will get another 4 years.
Oh, without a doubt. And now after what happened these past 2 days, you know, there's no question in my mind that Obama has a good shot of being reelected again. There's no doubt in my mind now. And it's our fault.
I mean, what the hell is the first debate going to look like when Obama says, look, you disagree with this, but you agree with this part of the health care plan. We fashioned it. We modeled it after your health care in Massachusetts, Governor. And what's Romney going to come back with? Well, you know, that might be true. You might think you did, but you see, having had our health care system in Massachusetts, we know what didn't work, and you still included it in the Obamacare, and we intend to pull that out and replace it with our own plan. Okay, that's not going to leave the majority of the American public feeling warm and fuzzy. All the Obama-nots that are going to vote for Obama are going to believe that, as it stands, Obamacare is perfectly fine and righteous. All those who think that the whole damn mess ought to be repealed and the government has no business involved in it are going to hear Romney and say, well, hell, we're better off with him than we are with Obama.
Oh, my
And this is the same Romney that announced the other day that he was not opposed to a value-added tax, all right? And now you have Paul Ryan stating just today that he would not rule out closing tax loopholes for the wealthy, which, guess what, folks, starting to sound a lot like Obama. We need to increase taxes on the wealthy and perhaps close tax loopholes for everyone. Well, guess what? That is called a tax increase, no matter how you slice it. So we are just seeing the curtain pulled back on the facade that is the Republican Party, the mosquito class, the ruling elite are no damned different in their methodology or their thought processes than are the progressives in the Democrat Party. They're all a bunch of damn liberal progressives, okay? Have this progressive socialist ideology. They believe that the government can cure all your ills. I tried to warn everyone about this, that Romney's out there saying, you know, we're going to create new jobs. It is not the government's purpose to create jobs. It is their purpose to get the hell out of the way and let the market do what it does, and that is create growth and encourage good economic investment and savings. It is called capitalism. And what we have right now and what we have had for the last 80 plus years doesn't resemble capitalism in any way, shape, or form. It is at best a soft fascism.
It is. It's the Keynesian theory. That's all they believe in. It's the Keynesian model.
And, you know, I've come to understand, Robert, that, you know, it is socialized fascism.
Oh, well, you can call it what you want to call it. It's just that
I call it softism.
Well, every time I think about how stupid I was all along since I was a senior in high school, I mean, I saw the handwriting on the wall when I wrote a paper in Problems of American Democracy. You know, I made a B on it. It's socialized medicine practical for the United States of America. I mean, I should read it one night on the radio show on Constitution Hour.
Well, I would have given you an F for a grammatical error, because to use socialism and democracy in the same sentence is...
You misunderstood me. I said, is socialized medicine practical for the United States?
Okay, well, yeah, that's what I meant to say. I'm sorry. Socialism and practical in the same sentence is an oxymoron.
Well, that's why I wrote it that way. I wrote it that way to let my teacher know back then, when I knew he was a colonel, a retired colonel from the Army, and he's a teacher, and we just butted heads. He would do anything in his power to really just piss me off to have a debate with him. You know, he would he knew I was conservative. He knew I was a fiscally conservative young man at age 18.
Was he a socialist do you think he was goading you into a debate so that the class would benefit from hearing a fiscally conservative ideology debated in the class?
I think probably both, because I was the only Jew in my class, basically.
The idea of a fiscally conservative Jew is somewhat unique. There are not a lot of Jewish folks in the Republican Party or in the conservative movement as a whole. The majority vote Democrat.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm a rare breed. I don't think there's not too many. I'm probably the only one in Sarasota County, most likely. Most likely, I'm probably the only one that feels the way you guys do. I believe the Jewish people are Democrats for what they stand for. I mean, they're Democrats for a reason, it's all about Israel. Well, you know, you can't be a Democrat just because of Israel. You can be whatever you want because of Israel, whatever you want to believe in.
And here's the thing, and that kind of segues into the next clip that I wanted to play, because I think there's a whole lot of Jewish Americans that are having buyer's remorse over Obama and their vote for Obama, and I want to play this. It's a gentleman on MSNBC discussing his disgust with Obama's policy and exclaiming the fact that there isn't a damn hair's bit of difference between Obama's foreign policy and that of George Bush. So I'm going to play this clip, and it's a pretty short one, and then we'll get right back to you.
Jeremy Scahill, what was your impression of watching the posture from the Democratic Party at this convention on national security issues, which is what you cover?
Well, I mean, you know, regarding the way that Osama bin Laden's name was used by the Democrats at the convention, it really felt like we were watching a parade of jingoism that belonged in a sports bar. And you know, I think that the fact is that there has been no serious analysis of the president's foreign policy. In all of the coverage I've seen of the Democratic National Convention, including MSNBC, there has been no serious, hard-hitting critique of the president's foreign policy from the issues that actually are real or that distinguish him, you know, from the Republicans. Because the fact is that the Democratic foreign policy is distinguishable from the Republicans only insofar as the president took some of the worst aspects of the Bush-era foreign policy and pushed them forward.
Well, that's not entirely fair. I mean, there's some truth to that, but if you look at what's happened on Iran over the past few weeks, I think the administration has quite skillfully pushed back on pressure that was mounting on them to set a deadline by which they would take military action, I think that was a pretty significant
We have a president who, in a two-week period, authorized the assassination of three U.S. citizens in Yemen, including a 16-year-old boy who was killed while he was having a barbecue with his teenage friend named Abdulrahman al-Laki. They have never been able to produce who the target of that strike was.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that we do not know that he was the target.
The president authorized operations over a two-week period that resulted in the deaths of three American citizens, including a 16-year-old boy. And if you're going to use Osama bin Laden's killing as a football to spike on the national stage, I want the president of the United States to explain to the American people why. If you're going to use it in such a cynical way.
I agree with you about the drone policy, but it would be political malpractice to A, not kind of milk the bin Laden thing on the national stage when you're running against the Republicans.
I travel in countries where these drone strikes happen. I'm not talking about political malpractice.
Right, but we're talking about the convention. So there's two different things. There's the discussion about the president's foreign policy, but then there's also the discussion about kind of how they're using that foreign policy to win a very important election.
But many of the media discussions, including here on MSNBC, about foreign policy during the convention felt like we were watching an Obama for America meetup, not an actual serious critique of this president's most egregious aspects of his foreign policy, where you do see that of the Republicans. There's all of this going after Romney, and I think it's completely legitimate. But some of the core issues of this president's national security policy are not being debated. And I'm sorry, but watching John Kerry and Joseph Biden criticizing the war in Iraq. They voted for the war in Iraq. Joe Biden was the chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and shut down debate about Iraq when it was being debated in this country. I mean, there's revisionism, there's jingoism. To me, I'm not thinking about this from a cynical political perspective. I'm talking about life and death issues that cut to the heart of, are we going to follow the Constitution when it comes to due process for American citizens?
We should disaggregate some of the issues, right? Because I think a lot of things are getting bound up.
All right. And, you know, Mike is saying on BTR, conservatives yesterday told him we have military presence all over the world, and if we pull out of Afghanistan before total victory, we will create a vacuum. Well, you know, Mike, I would have told him that a vacuum might be the only damn thing that can clean up the mess we've created over there in the first place. They need to get some traveling salesmen over there and go door to door with some curvy vacuum cleaners. Because the whole thing sucks.
Oh, my God. Ron?
Yes, sir.
You know what else has this? Well, I saw a picture of Joe Biden today. He was at a restaurant, and it was two bikers and a biker girl. And the biker girl was giving him a lap dance at the restaurant, sitting on his lap.
Ah, boy, I'll tell you.
Smokey Joe strikes again. He gets away with a lot of stuff, doesn't he?
Well, the guy's an idiot.
Oh, my God. I don't understand how these politicians get away with murder, and then if I blink the wrong way, someone's gonna beat the you know what out of me.
Well, you know what Mike is talking about here in the chat room. This is one of these things that really gets me irked. You know, when these idiots, much like Richard, who called into the show last Monday, when these idiots call in and they believe themselves to be conservative and they think they have the answers on foreign policy and national security, and they don't have the first damn clue. You know? Oh, well, I served, I was in Panama. What the hell was that all about? We had a dope dealer in Noriega that wouldn't play by the rules that were set up for him, and he tried to sneak some of that money and go his own way, and so we had to go down there and shut him down. Same thing with Saddam Hussein. We were all fine and happy and dandy with Saddam until he got a little too damn big for his britches and tried to do something like Muammar Gaddafi. He was going to start selling Iraqi oil for gold, and by God, we couldn't have that. You know? And these people think, and I'm sorry for all these folks out there if this offends you, but it's the damn truth. Just because you were a grunt in the military does not mean that you have the beginning and the end and the holy grail on foreign policy. I served in the military also, but I don't wear it like a damn bozo button. Okay? It's something that I think everyone should do if they feel moved to do so. But again, going back to that gentleman's statement of jingoism, okay, which is chauvinism or nationalism. I've warned about nationalism and the nationalism ideology ever since I've come on Patriot Families, ever since I've had a radio show, and even before then. Yes, it is America, and yes, it is a great and grand experiment and a wonderful idea. But just because it is a great idea doesn't mean that we should all hoist the flag and make our stand on the idea of nationalism. The founders would roll in their graves at the very thought of a nation and nationalism. Nationalism is what brought us Adolf Hitler.
Well, I was going to say that. That was the core of communism, socialism, fascism, whatever, whatnot, the three stooges, I would call them.
Right, and the very idea that our government can completely and totally screw up everything they touch, okay, except foreign policy. When it comes to foreign policy, by God, they get it right. They're never wrong. And our national security and our foreign policy has been perfect since 1776, is beyond jingoism. It's asinine.
Well, you know, Ron, you got to keep an eye out on this city councilwoman from Salt Lake City, I think is in Utah. Her name is Mia Love. She's running for Congress. You got to keep an eye on this woman. Because she's from Haiti, number one, and we need to watch out for this woman.
Now there's a social experiment gone awry. Haiti.
Yeah.
Another crown jewel of socialism.
There you go.
I mean, these people piss me off. It is totally flies in the face of any kind of logic or reason whatsoever. The idea that socialism somehow can work if we can just figure out how to merge it with fascism, with corporatocracy, with an oligarchy, with something, with anything, we will achieve social utopia. It's just a bunch of crap.
I thought I'd throw in a congresswoman watch for you guys. seriously, when I was listening to her policies, there's no differentiation. You can't differentiate between the two, no more.
Okay, now see, I wasn't going to do this until later. I was going to play this at the very opening. And I'm not trying to cut you off, but I'm sorry, I have to, because I think Hank Jr. says it better than anybody else. So here we go, folks, a little Hank Williams Jr. Never kick a cow turd on a hot day.
Buy a fridge for college, get an ice tray. Or buy a fridge for college, get an Xbox 360.
They made a huge miscalculation.
Unlock the deal at Windows.com.
About the mood of our nation. Good working people done got tired of being wrong. Then they saw one of their own get mistreated and dumped on.
he's not alone.
You know, guys, that saying is so true. God bless Harry Truman. Never kick a cow turd on a hot day because you'll get crap all over your pants leg. You know, from now on, anybody that gets upset and says a single solitary thing in the chat room when I mention Ron Paul, by God, you're going to get called out. I'm going to invite you to call the show, and then I am going to promptly hand you your behind in a basket because you don't have a clue. And I am not going to be polite, and I am no longer going to let these idiots get away with being so ignorant in the face of all that is going on in this country. I am absolutely appalled and angered and shamed that the American people are so ignorant that they have failed to see that there was only one individual up there who was telling the truth, and the rest were just a bunch of damn fluffers. And I'm here to tell you, I hope every one of you wallows in self-pity and enjoys your remorse at your selection of Mr. Romney and Mr. Ryan. They're yours, folks. They don't belong to me. They belong to you, and it's all on you. So I hope you enjoy the coming garbage that's fixing to be shoved up your tailpipes.
Wow. Well, Ron, that says it all, I guess.
Well, you know, I've heard that we have the government we deserve, and I didn't fully understand it and grasp it until now. And I got to tell you, we deserve every damn thing we've got coming to us. We have been idiots and fools, complacent, lazy, morons for far too long.
I was in that crowd.
I was in that crowd, and I apologize immensely
for my
dereliction over the last 30 years of just floating along in the mainstream and believing all that junk, bought into it, hook, line, and sinker.
But I voted for Ron Paul in the party primary, so you can't accuse me of anything.
Well, you know, I mean, it's the old adage, it's too little too late, you know?
I know, but I gave it my best shot.
And the majority of these Tea Party people, you know, they're well-meaning, but you know what? Well wishes don't get it done. And you know, there's millions of these well-wishers out there in the Tea Party that can't see past their ignorant ideology over foreign policy. We've got to defend Israel. Well, you know what? Screw Israel. We're about to lose our form of government completely, forever, permanently. Even the very idea of a Republican form of constitutional government will be absolutely lost and gone forever. A footnote in the history books. We're done.
Oh, according to Biden, history's unhinged, folks.
Biden is unhinged.
Those are like four powerful words, Ron. History's on five or seven. Did he have the nerve to go sit on a biker's lady's lap and have a lap dance on the government? Well, on us, basically.
You sure it wasn't Barney Frank and drag? That whose lap he was sitting on. And I believe we have Miss Linda on the phone with us. Miss Linda, welcome aboard.
Thank you, sir. How are you doing? Hi, Robert.
I'm wore out and pissed off.
Well,
no, that's a bad combination.
The wars that we get into and the stupid things we do, the money that keeps, I mean, and your beginning, of course, talking about letting the judge speak, Napolitano, he's just amazing. Oh, you know, and when you talk about socialism and these fools, they just keep trying to ram it down everybody's throats. They think it's going to work because we're in, you know, a different geographical location. My question to them is, why don't you just try to reverse the rotation of the earth? I mean, this makes just as much sense to me. You know what I'm saying? And as far as getting entangled in foreign relations, this is from 1796, from George Washington's farewell address. The great rule of conduct for us in regard to foreign nations is in extending our commercial relations to have with them as little political connection as possible. So far as we have already formed engagements, let them be fulfilled with perfect good faith. That's just one portion. There are several that he has stated in this book. So, you know, this is right where Ron Paul stood. He stood right with those people. He got it. I mean, so does Napolitano. He gets it all the way live. I mean, the guy probably knows the Constitution equally with Ron Paul. You know, it's craziness. We're sick of it. They lie to us, and they oppress us. So, you know.
Well, and I'm just so disgusted. You know, as Mike put in the chat room, the Tea Party is full of crap. They should have unified behind Ron Paul.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, I asked him, and of course the chat censored me and wouldn't let me put in the guy's first name, Dick. Dick Army, I guess it thought I was saying bad words. But you know,
Richard.
During the convention, the whole tribute to Ron Paul after the great theft took place, when they went in and changed the rules and disenfranchised
all the grassroots
people, and I hope they're enjoying it right now. I hope they're so pissed off they're ready to pull their hair out, because they got exactly what they deserved, because they were trying to do the same damn thing to Ron Paul. So I hope they're walking funny for a while. But, you know, Dick Army sat there and just sang the praises of Ron Paul and what a great constitutionalist he is and so on and so forth. Where in the hell was Dick Army and his endorsement of Ron Paul a couple of years ago, which would have gone a long way with the Tea Party idiots?
Right.
And I call them Tea Party idiots because they only get it just a little bit right. You know, they really remind me, quite honestly, of the pro-choicers, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, we want less taxation, taxed enough already, but by God, send troops over and let's bomb Iran. I mean, that is the same ideology, the same narrow-minded mentality as I'm all for a woman right to choose to abort her fetus, but I'm also all for the government to tell you what damn light bulb you've got to use. It's just as stupid.
I know. Some people you just can't get through. I mean, you know, no matter what you say to them, they've been brainwashed and they just can't get out of that little box they've created, just like the one you talked about yesterday. I'm telling you.
Yep. They're in their own little reality and it has nothing to do with the real world.
It is. But what was really sad when I saw Flute do the speech, and Kennedy, Lady Kennedy's speech was just God. I mean, those two. I just wanted to give my
Did you guys
my fist. I just wanted to give my.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to give I just wanted to get my fist and punch the TV out after watching that those two speak.
Well, you know, that's kind of the way I felt, Robert, when I caught the clip of Condoleezza Rice up there talking about constitutional government and I mean, I thought, you know, if somebody, well, I can't say that on Blog Talk, the FBI will show up at my door. If there was someone there to treat her like a pinata full of dog squeeze, it would have been appropriate.
Unbelievable. You know, if we don't see you next Monday, to hear you from you next Monday night, we know where you are.
Well, actually, you know, I may have to move the show back to 7:30. I don't know yet because I have had a little change going on at my place of employment, and I use that term loosely, not as it's defined in Section 3401 of Title 26, the Federal Tax Code. But
oh, God.
Nonetheless, yeah, they're, you know, evidently, you know, I talk a little bit of shop here for just a moment, and I don't expect everyone to understand, but rather, I think that my employer is taking a page out of the Congress's textbook or playbook. Rather than hiring automotive repair technicians that have the technical capability to perform all the duties required of someone that you would entrust to repair your automobile, they think that the best way to cover that gap is to take their service manager, yours truly, and move him up to a different store to fill that gap because I happen to have those technical capabilities and their technicians do not. I told them that, you know, using a service manager in lieu of a duly qualified technician is a piss-poor stopgap measure. But what do I know? I've only been in the business for 32 years.
Wow. Pretty crazy. Did you happen to catch any of the hysterical speech that Flick Willie gave at the DNC? Because he was quite truthful when he... when he stated that if you give this clown, he didn't call him a clown, but that's my interpretation of the POTUS, 4 more years, you know, he says, well, we haven't had enough time to fix the economy and feel the effects of all these measures, you know. And he says, but if you give him the 4 years, he says, I guarantee you, you'll feel it. And I thought, yep, grab the voucher.
I promise you, ladies and gentlemen, it won't take that long, and you're going to be feeling it.
You did speak the truth there.
I'm here to tell you, you will be feeling it. And, you know, I mean, I always, you know what would have been great, and no, I did not catch Clinton's speech on purpose, but what would have been awesome is to have that woman that used to do the closed captioning, you know, sign language on Saturday Night Live. I mean, honest to God, during these guys' speeches, And actually translating what they're really saying instead of what's coming out of their mouth, that at least would have lent some legitimacy to either one of these damn national conventions.
And it would have been a hell of a lot more entertaining. Oh, my God. But
I mean, I had to
bring that up because it was funny when I thought about it. I thought, oh, yeah, you guys better go to the drugstore and get pounds of that stuff because you're going to need it. Oh, my God. Yikes. Yeah. These people.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman. I just got a Hummer, okay? And I'm not talking about one with four wheels on it.
Are you wrong for that invitation?
Absolutely.
You did it really? That I give you an A+. Did he? What he said? When Bill Clinton said,
"We just need more time." See, you haven't felt it yet, but you will. You're going to feel it. Trust me. And folks, when you begin to feel it, just remember, Barney Frank's retired.
Yeah. I went through this before me, Ron. Repeat what I said in Bill Clinton's words, in his voice. none of my predecessors could have not gotten to the best of Obama, what Obama had to face. Go ahead, you do it now.
I didn't understand the last part of it. None of my predecessors could have done something with what Obama had to face.
And none of my predecessors or me could not have fixed this.
In the time period. Yeah.
No one could have fixed what Obama had to face or what Monica had to face.
Yeah. Oh, Monica, baby.
Poor girl. Oh, my Lord.
That's why Laura changed the carpet.
Well, you know, quite honestly, I mean, not to be too grotesque, but going back over the last, since at least Ronnie Reagan and probably before, that's what the American people have had to face the last 80 years, you know?
Yep, it's disgusting.
It's disgusting in your face, and you're going to like it, boy. Come on over here, son. You ever been to Catholic school?
Oh, yeah. Well, I can just attest that, yes, I have.
Well, that might explain a lot, Robert, but we won't go there today.
Oh, my God, you.
They tell me, Father, is that Nookie green? I said, no, son, I think it's a reflection from her shoes.
Oh, my Lord. You know, man, I don't even know if I'm even going to go to the booth this time around.
Would that be the confession booth or the voting booth?
Either one, man.
Either one, you come out feeling like you've been in the first, right?
Well, you know, I've always voted, Ron. I mean, Mike was right when he says, if you voted, it's your fault. But, you know, I got a great message for the National Rifles Association, which really, really floored me how...
Well, now, you know, there's another topic of discussion right there, and I hate to cut you off, but I'm just going to keep doing it. NRA... Well, if you go, you give me ideas, you know. If we go back to 2007, okay, the NRA endorsed a bill that was passed, signed into law by Bush the Younger, and I tried to tell people that it was a backdoor issue, and they read it, you know, several people I know read the bill, and it was very short, you know, amazingly enough, and really all it was an amendment. It was amending the 96 assault weapons ban under Clinton, and I may have the dates wrong on that, so forgive me. I don't have perfect total memory recall, but the text of the bill did nothing more than allowing local law enforcement to access your medical records. It was a bill to tie your medical records to your law enforcement. Okay. And the purpose for that, go back and look it up. It was done in 2007. Just type in 2007 gun law, and I'm sure you can find it on Google and Thomas. And what you have to do, and the judge actually did a program on that piece of legislation afterwards, you have to take the original bill, pull up the text of the bill, and then insert this portion of it into the said bill where it belongs in order to understand the effect of it. And it's in the section of the original bill that talks about being clinically diagnosed with a mental disorder, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow.
Such as vets returning with PTSD. All right, and anyone that's ever been diagnosed by a doctor with being ADHD or ADD or any other make-believe horse maneuver that they contrive, and yes, I say contrive, I was the subject of a University of Illinois study when I was a very young man for hyperactivity. And I was pinched and poked and prodded and measured in every conceivable way and put on treadmills and all kinds of neat stuff.
Wow. So this is where this started, this tying it together. And
oh, absolutely. It absolutely tied it together so that if you're, traveling in your automobile, which is your right, don't let the government fool you into believing that driving an automobile is a privilege. It is not. You have a right to travel unencumbered by government interference or regulation upon the public roadways. You are the public, ladies and gentlemen. You pay for those damned public roadways. If you go back to the Uniform Commercial Driver's Licensing Act, you will find in it a federal act to regulate commerce upon the public roadways. That is commercial travel. That is traffic. Guess what traffic is? Traffic is hiring or hauling persons or products for profit. That is the definition of commerce and also the definition of traffic. And if you are using the public roadways that the public paid for to operate in commerce for a profit, then you are subject to regulation, i.e. driver's licenses, vehicle operating licenses, taxes, insurance, the regulation of the speed at which you travel upon those roadways. You can go back to a Supreme Court case, which was Chicago Motor Club versus, I don't remember the other party, where the federal Supreme Court ruled that a commercial vehicle is a dangerous piece of machinery that requires a tremendous amount of skill to operate.
Right.
A private passenger automobile is a luxury device, and it is a piece of personal private property that requires no discernible skill at all. The two are wholly separate and distinct.
What do you mean by no discernible skill?
That means anyone can take their private passenger automobile, Robert, even a mere 7-year-old, and enjoy motoring on the roadways that belong to him, the public roadways, without having to have all of the various things that would be required of a commercial vehicle to be involved in traffic upon the roadways.
So if the government found about my condition that I have, they could basically take my license away.
They can, because you're not allowed to be in commerce. They can regulate commerce. And if you're operating a commercial vehicle, is your vehicle registered with the state wherein you reside?
Yes.
And does it have a license on the back of it?
Yes.
Do you carry insurance on that vehicle?
Yes.
Well, then it is classified as a motor vehicle. You are involved in commerce. And you do have a commercial driver's license, whether or not you realize it. Now, the state will tell you, no, that's not a commercial driver's license, but I beg to differ. And you see, the federal government knew that they could not regulate your right to travel upon the public roadways in your private passenger automobile, your private property. So after the Commercial Driver's Licensing Act was passed by the federal government, they granted that out to the states and said, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know, you could make a hell of a lot of revenue if you could contrive a way to register all motor vehicles, all automobiles, all private passenger automobiles as if they were commercial vehicles, and you could create a whole classification of licensing that didn't appear to be commercial, but in fact was.
Wow. So I could be a commercial truck driver now of my car.
Well, now, see, I'm not familiar with Florida state law, but I do know here in Georgia. I stumbled across it wholly by accident. I was in possession of a 1966 Ford pickup truck that did not have a title anymore. The title had since been lost many years ago. And so when I purchased it, all I got was a bill of sale. And in the state of Georgia, you're not required to have a title. You can own or possess a private passenger automobile merely by a bill of sale. And when I went to register my vehicle, or what I thought was my motor vehicle, with the Department of Motor Vehicles, I was informed that because my property did not have attached to it a title or certificate of title, I was unable to register said property with the Department of Motor Vehicles. I found that intriguing. So I went home and I began to do a little research under Title 40 in the state of Georgia, which is the Motor Vehicle Code. And I found out that all vehicles that are required to be registered must carry on the rear of the vehicle a license to operate said motor vehicle for a period of 12 months. Well, I thought, well, that's interesting. So the only requirement to have an operator's license on the back of my motor vehicle would be if my motor vehicle is actually a motor vehicle. And the way I know it's a motor vehicle is if it's required by the state to be registered. So if it's not required by the state to be registered, then it certainly can't be a motor vehicle. And at that point, I'm not required to have an operator's license on the back of it. And I would also not be required to have a driver's license to operate it. And I thought, well, gee, what class of property might this thing be if it doesn't fall under the motor vehicle laws of the state? And as I was thumbing through, lo and behold, I found one small short sentence that mentioned a private passenger automobile.
Mm-hmm.
But it did not go on to define it anywhere at all in the whole of the law. It's not defined. They only make mention of it in one small section, one sentence. They recognize the existence of a piece of property called a private passenger automobile.
Wow.
And the only mention of it in the whole of the law. And you know why? Because the law is not concerned with regulating, because it cannot regulate, a private passenger automobile.
Wow. And was that the state law that you were reading?
Yes. And the state law, I promise you, if you look it up in your state and then you go to the Uniform Commercial Driver's Licensing Act and the federal, you will find that it's a lot like the tax code. The states simply copy the majority of their state tax code from the federal tax code.
Wow. Yep.
So there you have it, boys and girls. You know, there's a lot of things that the state does in your name. They want you to believe that you're privileged.
Yep.
And you are privileged to be the proud owner of a commercial vehicle, even though you're slogging back and forth to work every day, and it's not for hire. You're not driving on the roadways to earn a profit. But what you don't know won't hurt you, right? And look at all the revenue they will have generated in the meantime, until such time as someone brings a suit against the state and unravels the whole damn thing, which will never happen. As Miss Linda's fully well aware of a gentleman in California that made that challenge, and the governor, the then governor, Mr. Ronald Reagan, said,
right,
you know what, guys, leave him alone. Leave that guy alone. He can drive 150 miles an hour down the expressway if that's what he wants to do. Leave him alone.
Yeah, because these guys in power, they know the real deal. They just don't want anyone else to know it because it's not profitable for them.
Right.
And it's not profitable for their cronies.
And you want to know why they say leave those people alone?
Because then it won't get out.
Well, if they pursued it and it went all the way to the state Supreme Court and the individual won, that would be setting what?
A precedent.
Absolutely. There would be case law for everyone else to pile in behind and recite exactly what that gentleman would have recited in court. And guess what, boys and girls? The veil would be lifted. The emperor would be seen to be completely stark naked as he truly is. And the people would gain back their power and authority. And we can't have that.
You know, it just gripes you.
Ron.
Yes, sir.
My question to you is just that. Why doesn't the National Rifles Association sue Judge Sotomayor for saying what she said, that there's no, Americans have no individual right to bear arms?
Well, Robert, there's a whole plethora of reasons. The first of which would be that there is no there's no way for them to state a claim for which relief could be granted. There is no injury in fact, and it's not a federal question. So under Rule 12b-6 and several others, that would be tossed out immediately. It would never see the light of day, as is proper. You know, there's just because Sotomayor sits on the Supreme Court of legislative morons, it does not preclude her from espousing her opinion, even when she's absolutely dead wrong.
Correct. Yeah, it's every time they open their mouths, you get more astounded because you just can't believe what's coming out. But yes, they have the right to say stupid things because.
Well, you know, this is part and parcel why I continue to play that song Stuck in the Middle with you.
Yeah.
Because we are absolutely, ladies and gentlemen, surrounded. If it's not bad enough that we have elevated the presidency to the point of hypocrisy, mm-hmm. whereby the president is nothing more than the king of the Senate and the Congress, we have our Congress legislating through lobbyists and law firms. We have legislative bureaucracies whereby
yep.
the agencies that are created by these myriad of laws that our Congress creates or has created and then given to them for them to present as their own children. And then we have the judiciary at every damned level, whether it's the state level or the federal level. Legislating from the bench, we don't have a prayer. We are being legislated into obsolescence.
Well, we're into total slavery because they've got a vice grip on us and they won't let go. And it keeps getting worse. And it's like, oh my God. And you know, I keep hearing these arguments from different people about, oh, the Democrats want big government and the Republicans want small government. Horse feathers. They're both in on this deal, and it's time it stopped. I don't know how we do it, but maybe the financial collapse will finally. I don't know.
Well, we're the ones who are going to suffer, not them.
Well, I don't know about that, Robert. What my hope is this, and I shouldn't say this out loud, but I'm going to anyway. My hope is this, that the progressives will turn on one another in times of absolute economic turmoil, and it will be much like black-on-black crime in the ghetto, and these people will begin killing each other off, and we can sit back and nourish ourselves on our food storage and defend our food storage with our weapons, and pray to the God in our Bibles as these morons demolish one another. And you know what? I think, quite honestly, it might be the best thing that ever happened to this country since 1776.
I agree with you. I think that's the only thing short of that would do it quicker quite honestly, and I don't even want to go there because it would just frighten the hell out of me, would be an EMP, because they wouldn't have any damned electronics either.
Well, you know, I'm thinking we should we need to, you know what, we need to create a new term, an IMP, imp.
They are imp. I am. Say that one more time, Ronna.
An IMP, imp, IMP.
Yep.
Ignorant, ignorant moron purging.
Oh wow!
It's like an ethnic. It's similar to ethnic cleansing, but it's just the ignorant morons purging one another from the face of this earth.
You know what the Congress and the Senate remind me of? They remind me of a bunch of bookies.
You know, I just had a great visual. I just had the most awesome visual you could imagine. You know, Nancy Pelosi and Paul Ryan fist fighting each other for a can opener to get the last can of dog food.
Oh my God,
that would be good. Now that's bread and circuses for you, baby. That's a good one. That's theater.
I'd like to see. Your girlfriend Schultz have some cat food on some crackers.
Yeah, a little pate. Little Frisky's pate.
Oh man, we're gonna get Ron. I think the government's gonna come after us. I really do.
Well, there is a black SUV parked in front of my house as we speak, with all the windows tinted out. So they may be coming to take me away shortly. No,
oh,
I'm
God.
Kidding, guys. I'm kidding.
Don't say that. Well, I don't know anymore. Sometimes, you know what, when I'm not feeling so hot, you know, I get kind of frustrated and I go to myself, I don't care no more. I feel like I'm going to die. You know? But that's what these headaches make you feel like, you know? And so when I start saying like that, you know, my friendly audience says, we already got our black dresses and we're waiting for you to die. So go ahead, die.
Oh dear.
Well, you know, Robert, that mentality is the only thing that has kept me reasonably sane for the last 30 plus years. It's a lie, but it's one that I speak on a daily basis, and that is I just don't give a damn what other people think. But I really do, you know, and I do care what other people think. Not necessarily about me or you know, it's not about me. It's
right.
Much, much larger than that, and I'm pragmatic enough to understand that.
If we want to
descend into collectivism for a moment, then I think it should be the idea that everyone, not just Americans, okay, not just the generations to come, not just my grandchildren, my future great grandchildren, but every human being on this planet should get to experience the idea that is enshrined in our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that the way that we can foster that is at the barrel of a gun, but I truly believe that every human being, alive or that ever will come in the future, deserves the shot at being truly free. And
agreed.
until we can absolutely destroy the myth that is socialist utopia,
mm-hmm.
and all its various forms, our duty, our obligation to care and to keep fighting will not end.
It's our fiduciary responsibility to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America until it ends.
Correct. And even after. Now that it's ended. I mean, it has ended. It's been ended.
For a long time.
We still have a moral obligation.
Oh, you have the responsibility. It's your duty.
Correct. And it's not just to those people that are Americans. And that was the whole idea of not getting involved in entangling alliances and having a Zionist foreign policy, if you will. It wasn't our obligation, nor was it the proper method for us to attempt to export the idea of American excellence.
Right.
The barrel of a gun.
Exactly.
No matter how much we disagree with the ideology of the people that we're talking to.
And in the beginning of this great experiment here, other nations recognize, they go, oh, look what America's doing. They've got something right. Let's try to copy them. I mean, and that's the way it should be, out of their own free will to say, wow, let's take a look at this, their ideology.
They might be onto something. Look how well it's working for them.
Exactly. And I do believe that Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and a few others, they understood that. I really think they got that. And I know George Washington got it because he spoke about it in many of his addresses. They were brilliant. It's hard to read him because he was really flowery, and if you're taking it from the context of the original speech. But it's brilliant.
And, interestingly enough, if you go back and look at the first real thought of conflict,
mm-hmm.
after the ratification of the Constitution, which was 1789,
right?
The first threat arose 1791. I mean, the threat had arisen prior to that, but just imagine, put yourself in their shoes for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the reasons why, ladies and gentlemen, the founders got it right, that we needed a president to preside over the legislators, the other two branches, the legislative branch of government. There were people wanting to prosecute a war with France.
France has been our 50s.
Were it not for France, there probably would not be a United States of America. Were it not for the Tsar in Russia, there would not be a United States of America. And yet, here we are just a few years removed from that battle, and Congress is discussing declaring war with France. Why? Purely economic reasons. They realized that there was still a war going on between France and England, and they thought it more prudent to side with England than with France. And wouldn't you know, we had a large amount of credit with England, larger than the debt we owed to France in assisting us to defeat the crown.
It's pretty nuts.
And that was the first real tax act of Congress. The first time that a direct tax was issued by our Congress, an income tax, if you will, but it wasn't an income tax. It was a direct property tax. But it shows you how the founders saw the taxing power of the federal government, the new creation of the federal government.
Right.
What they did was they followed the rule book. They first assessed the tax. And when you assess a tax, you have to have an amount in mind. Okay? So when you hear about an assessment, that's what it's all about, an amount. You first have to come up with an amount.
Right.
Okay? They were certain that war with France at that point in 1791 was inevitable. So we wanted to appropriate enough revenue to prosecute the coming war. Congress came up with the dollar figure of $10 million. $10 million. And so they wanted to secure $10 million from the 13 states. So they set about assessing a tax, $10 million. Wouldn't you know it, they took the 13 states and they had a census just a couple years prior. They divided up the $10 million equally among the 13 states based on the amount of population in each state and the representation they enjoyed in government. That is called apportionment. What they did was, you know, they apportioned the tax. If New York, out of the 13 colonies, if New York, their representation in Congress equated to 15% of the sum total, then 15% of $10 million is New York's share of the tax that was assessed. And they left it to the state to collect the tax and to determine the method of how to exact the tax from its citizens. Why would they do that? Well, probably because the founders understood that the states were still sovereign and that Congress had no authority to tax directly the individual people within each of the sovereign states. That would be overstepping their authority. See, they could tax the states directly, yes, indeed, and they did so. But they could not. Yeah, they could not directly tax individuals within each state. They knew better.
Wow.
This almost sounds like a luxury tax.
Well, no, it wasn't a luxury tax. It was a direct tax, direct on the states. It wasn't something that they could pay for through, you know, taxing commerce or sales. I guess they could have if they wanted to. And the government also offered to the states a discount, a 10% discount for early payment. If they paid their portion early, they would get a discount.
Wow. Unbelievable.
That's amazing.
But that shows you the founders' understanding of the operation of their taxing authority.
Right.
And it also demonstrates just how damned far we've strayed from any semblance of that kind of policy.
I know.
There is no respect for the individuals that comprise the United States of America.
Exactly. Exactly. I know. I mean, just step outside the bounds of what they, you know, the authoritarian rule, you'll find out how fast you get in trouble. It's ridiculous.
I mean, try to put up one of these prefabricated sheds in your backyard without some city inspector stopping by to ask you if you've gotten your permission slip to build their property.
I mean, everything that goes on in California and the other states too, I'm sure, especially with the EPA breathing down everybody's necks, it's insidious. And it's really time this stuff stopped. And then, you know, there are ways, like you said on another show, to get rid of the overbearingness of the United Nations. Just stop funding them. Well, can we not stop funding the EPA and the Planned Parenthood and the rest of it? I mean,
you know, we can. And I read something the other day. Hang on, I'll think of the term in a moment, and it's not nullification. Oh, doggone it. It's something that the president can do with the funds that Congress is using.
Right.
Oh, my God, that's a legal term, and it's like a seizure where the president, the executive, can actually seize the funds and lock them up.
Wow.
Where, you know, they cannot be used for any purpose. He can sequester those funds. And that's something that Ron Paul had talked about, you know, and everybody says, oh, there's nothing to president, you know, as a president, you can't do this, you can't. Yes, you can, ladies and gentlemen. The president does have within his abilities the ability to sequester every cent that goes to every executive agency. Guess what? That would be the IRS, the FBI, the CIA, the EPA. Let's go, you know. TSA, Homeland Security, shall I name more?
Oh, yeah.
Because they're all executive-level agencies. Yes, ma'am. So there is a way out with an honest executive
person, right, and the will to do it, and you know, with that mindset, of course, and that would have been Ron Paul. I get so upset when you see the shenanigans that have gone on in the last how many years, but they really tore it. I know Mike from the hot seat was just livid about the rule change at the RNC. So, I mean, it's blatant. Everything's falling apart.
Yeah, I was as well. And, you know, I mean, there was a lot of us that were, but I can't say that I was surprised. And my anger faded somewhat. And I think we just, you know, at this point, I'm just going to laugh at these people when they get all upset with the next idiot that's in office. If we get the next idiot, we may just be stuck with O'Bummer for 4 more years, guys.
Oh, God. Well, that's the end.
You know, because truthfully, all this crap that you're seeing coming out, you know, with Romney and Ryan, is nothing. This is going back to McCain-Palin and putting lipstick on a pig.
I know.
Maybe we should all start wearing lipstick.
I'm thinking Romney and Ryan ought to.
Yeah.
But then again, I didn't vote for Lieberman, so, you know.
Give me a love job.
There's very little difference between both sides of that coin, Romney, Ryan, Biden, schmuckface. But do you truly think in your heart that Romney hates this country the way Obama does?
Do I think Romney hates this country? No. Do I think Romney has a clue? No.
No. Well, that's the only saving grace, that he doesn't actually loathe what used to be. I don't know.
Look, you have to understand something. Let's put it in perspective, okay? Romney has no reason to loathe the system.
True.
It's made him fabulously wealthy.
Be wealthy.
He has rose-colored glasses, if you will. When he looks, he believes. And, you know, I suppose if I were a multi-millionaire, such as Mr. Romney is, or Mr. Donald Trump, or, you know, Warren Buffett or any of these others, I would probably not be able to see clear to embrace anything other than the status quo system either. Which is why I think you see the philosophical disagreements between, you know, a Soros and a Buffett and some of the others, which is how these idiots can maintain, you know, the idea that they're in favor of the Democrat Party instead of the Republican Party.
Okay, I guess my philosophical question would be, these guys who you mentioned, they've got their money. It's not going to go anywhere. I mean,
right. They're like, well, I've got mine, and you know what? If the system was good enough to make it for me, it ought to be good enough for everybody.
Now,
we don't want to change
that. Right, but what I'm saying is, let's say they've got it, so it's not going to go anywhere, regardless of who's in office. Now, let's say for the sake of argument that we had a miracle and we did get a Ron Paul in there and we went back to constitutional principles, they're still not going to lose their money. I mean,
no, but my God, but you have to understand, this is all they know. And they know the ins and outs of this system very well, which is why they've been very successful. And this is one of those situations where, you know, a lot of the practices that they have been engaged in are the very things that have the Occupy people in
yes.
a tizzy. Okay, and I happen to agree with them
sure.
when it comes to the ethical choices that mm-hmm. are made in the current status quo system of quasi-capitalism, otherwise known as sophism, you know, which is
right.
social fascism.
Yeah, and
so
the problem with these,
clear,
yeah.
They can't see clear that you know, there's anything wrong with the system other than there's this group of, you know, leftist idiots that want to upset the apple cart by taxing the crap out of them.
Yeah, so that's the only objection they have. It doesn't
the
make
only
sense
one.
To me.
That's the only one.
Oh, my God. No wonder we're in trouble.
Yeah.
So apparently then the greed has gone beyond all comprehension, and to them there's never enough. They're worse than alcoholics. There's never enough.
I don't know that I would say there's never enough. I think many of them, you know, are in the position like Romney, where, you know, he can sit back and his money's on autopilot. He can pay 10,
right.
10 or, you know, 13% tax, net tax at the end of the year, and he's okay with that. His problem is that he sees the socialist jackasses want to come in, and, you know, I think he sees these guys as a group of people that, if left to their own devices, would devise a way whereby him and everyone like him would be forced to subsidize their crack fest, okay?
Right.
And so he's opposed to that.
Which I agree with. I agree that he should be able to keep his money. And,
right.
And he's worked for it, whatever. I mean, even Buffett, I don't know how, except for what he did with Obama and the Keystone, but just that's the crap that pisses me off. But why not take the money that you have, your 12,000 square foot houses in La Jolla, whatever, enjoy it, and then do the right thing for the rest of the damn country. What the hell's wrong with that idea?
Well, I'll tell you what's wrong with that idea, and it's exactly what I said earlier. They don't know what the right thing is. They believe that the system, the box, is the right thing.
Then somebody needs to educate their little asses.
Well, they don't believe that you're going to be able to educate them. Who in the hell are you? Who in the hell am I? Some you know, eighth grade dropout that used to be an auto mechanic who lives in Georgia. Who in the hell am I to school Mittens Romney on what the right thing is? I mean, seriously, the man's a multimillionaire.
I know.
Clearly, if I had it right, I would be a multimillionaire like him. Clearly, I've got it wrong, and he's got it right.
Well, if this collapse comes down, they're about to find out how much we know.
It's not going to bother them.
Well,
not going to bother Romney at all.
Shit, they make me so damn mad. They're frustrated.
They're about to stop their hands
on. Somebody needs
Look,
to take these
Romney's
people outside and beat the hell out of them.
Romney's a Mormon, okay? And as a Mormon, he's already got a 4-year food supply locked up, guaranteed.
Oh, sure.
Because that's something they teach, preach, and practice.
Right.
Now, you know, I'm sure that he believes, since he's so wealthy, that he's certainly going to inherit his own planet, and he too will become Jesus one day.
Yeah, right.
For crying out loud. So, I mean, really, if we just look at these people in terms of Mormonism, okay, you think you can be rational with these people?
Yeah. Well, let's
come on.
Well, let's say, don't even have to have religion in the equation.
Mittens and his magic underwear.
Yeah. What you're saying is true. We've got a bigger problem than what they believe in, theology-wise.
But it is true. That's the thing. That's why I was talking about, the magic box the other day, because it's exactly what it is. Philo, when he talked about Plato's allegory, the allegory of the cave, okay, where you had these five guys living in a cave. They didn't know anything outside of their life. They lived in that little cave all their lives. And when one guy was let out and he saw the truth and tried to come back in and tell the rest of them, they threatened to kill him.
Oh, my God. Oh, there you go.
See, they had lived in the dark all their lives, and they did not want to face the bright light of reality.
So now who's the mushrooms and who are the wise ones? Let's ask that question. Boy,
I mean, if you've not seen that, Plato's cave, you really should, and think about it in just the plain terms, because that's exactly what that little video is talking about.
Wow, too many Christmas. What a daunting task we have. Yikes.
It's called School of Thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's 7 minutes long. I'm gonna post a link to it, and I'm not sure that this is the exact correct.
I want to see that, Ron. It should be an email on that.
But I'm gonna put it up there, and I mean, anybody that hasn't seen it, you really should.
Okay. Cool.
Tell you, man, it's a mess,
But I mean, basically, the allegory of the cave is that, and again, just fitting enough, the allegory of the cave comes from chapter 7 of Plato's Republic. Okay? So there's these four imaginary people who live in a cave. And the only light is a dim light that flickers on the wall. And they're chained, these four people, they're chained together. And everything they know has been flashed on the wall in front of them in shadow form, shadow puppets. And their whole lives, they live in this cave in complete darkness, except for the shadow puppets on the wall and the dim light. And then one day they come down, the masters descend, God descends, and unchains one of the four. Might have been six or five, I don't remember, but the number's not important. And so he has his freedom, and he ascends to the light, and it's so bright approaching the outside that it takes him days and days to adjust to that level of light. Once he's outside, he begins to experience life as it truly is, not as he's been told it is inside the cave. He's floored. Everything he's ever been told, everything he thought he knew, he has just discovered is an absolute lie. It's make-believe. It's all bullcrap. And he can't wait to run back and tell his friends and save them so they can savor and experience life as it was meant to be as a free human being. And they're just adamant that he is stark raving mad. And what he's telling can't possibly be true, otherwise they would know it. And they don't.
Oh, my God.
And I'm telling you, it is exactly the question you're asking right now. Why don't these guys get it? Just watch it.
I will. That's wrong. Well, then I, instead of calling them the mosquito class, we'll just call them the cave dwellers.
Yeah.
Iran.
Yes, Robert.
I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
What would happen? What would happen if I went to my voting precinct and I wore a white T-shirt and put red lipstick, like a picture of a lip on my front of my T-shirt?
You know, I think what would be more what would get you more attention, Robert, is to wear one of those outfits from my all-time favorite movie ever, Blazing Saddles.
Oh God!
Blazing
That's
Saddles.
My favorite too.
Yeah, you got to get the KKK costume with the smiley face on the back.
They say, "Please don't vote." And Michelle Poseidon says, "Please." Don't vote.
No. You'd have to have written on the back above the smiley face, slaves vote.
Vote. Exactly.
Okay. Ooh,
that would probably get you thrown in the local prison.
You think so?
Yep.
Swept off to Guantanamo Bay to be waterboarded. And then renditioned over to Turkey. For some intense what do we call it? Enhanced interrogation techniques.
Lord.
Oh my Lord, that's a thought though. That I probably won't be here next week because of what I just said, right?
Absolutely. And Robert, your email is in your email folder, sir.
Thank you, sir. I will look at that tonight after we sign off.
Well, you guys wind it up. I know you have a few minutes left, and thanks for letting me hang out and figure out these idiots. just giving me more things to think about. It's amazing what we go through. But you guys, God bless, and I'm going to go back to the chat room, and thanks a lot. Great show, Ron.
Thank you.
God bless, Linda.
Thanks for calling in, as always, Miss Linda, and God bless you and Godspeed to you. I'm going to start wrapping it up. Robert, any last thoughts, sir?
All we can do now is hope and pray for the best. That's the bottom line, and just keep healthy, keep moving, keep breathing until God takes us away.
That's right. I think I'm going to go out and buy me a pair of Kevlar knee pads.
I'm praying.
Absolutely.
That's all we can do.
Absolutely. Well, fortunately, the new laminate floor I just installed in my dining room has a lifetime warranty, so I won't wear it out by being on bended knee.
Oh, so I can, when I tile my floor, I can call you and you can spend a weekend on the floor to help me out.
you know, I could do that if you needed help, brother.
I'm only giving you the business, Rob, because it's so much fun to give you the business.
No problem, sir. I appreciate you calling in, Robert. And I'm gonna mute your mic. You have a great day. God bless. And
you too.
We'll talk to you guys later.
All right.
All right, everybody. I'm gonna wrap it up just a little bit early. We've still got about 12 minutes. I'll prattle on here for just a moment or two. I want to beg off of a couple of shows this week, so please forgive me for not being present for the shows tomorrow, probably through the rest of the week. I may be able to get to Brian's show Friday. It just depends on how the rest of my week goes. I'm going to have a very busy, busy week. I've got a lot of honeydews to finish here at home, and then this weekend I have my father and my stepmother moving in with us, and then Sunday I'm picking up my sister-in-law at the airport. She'll be staying with us for a month as well, so I'm going to have a very full slate the rest of the week. I'm not sure if I'll be doing a show Sunday or not. It just depends on how things pan out. But nonetheless, guys, just remember patriotfamilies.com. That's patriotfamilies with a YS.com. We have a full slate of shows every night at 7 p.m. Tomorrow night will be Bill Strong with Patriot Families Chat. Wednesday night, Miss Linda Sills, the young lady that was just on the phone with us with right from the left coast. Thursday night at 7 will be Miss Terry Rowland with Patriot Education. Then on Friday, we want to slide on over to Michael's radio show, The Hot Seat Left Is Never Right, at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Then back here Saturday at 7 p.m. for Mr. Michael Magic and Exposing the Illusion. And then hopefully yours truly will be here with Fed Up Frank on Sunday. And then we'll start back at Monday all over again. Keep your head up. I know there's a lot of craziness going on. We've got to remember, folks, that we can only rely on our own sanity, and we need to look to God for our salvation and just pray that we will have the wisdom to continue doing the right thing. And whenever you get burdened, just remember this song and think of Christ. timing is off and my voice is stuck. And thank God I've got a good memory to make up for it. God bless you guys. Get on your knees. Make sure you keep your eye on God. Your eye on the fight. Don't give up the fight. We already won. We've already won, brothers and sisters. They just don't know it, and they refuse to admit it. God bless you guys. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for your support. And just thanks for being awesome human beings. God bless. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.